Another minute on the quiz. Want to turn them in this way? Extra. Okie doke. So we're supposed to find all of these things on the Starfinder map. So this isn't identical to what was on the quiz, but it's close enough. So the meridian is the line in the sky that goes from the north point to the north celestial pole through zenith and back through south. So here's the north point, here's the north celestial pole, here's zenith and back through south. So it would be a line that goes basically top to bottom, which is tilted on the quiz that you had. North celestial pole is right there. That's the gourmet, the thing that it rotates about. The celestial equator is the line. Typically, it's a solid line, and it goes from the exact east point to the exact west point. The direction due east kind of would fool you. First of all, it's kind of on the wrong side compared to a map of the United States. So generally speaking, it's going to be on this side, but it's not going to be on the oval end. It's going to be where the celestial equator hits the horizon. That's because of the extra distortion we have at the edge of the map. So I already said that that's the direction of due north, which is, again, is tilted like that on the one that you've got. Zenith is right in the center of the map. The Big Dipper, now this is totally different. This is the Big Dipper in this map. And if I were going to look at this, you remember that kind of the long story is you take a pencil and you drape it over the constellation of interest, and then you orient the pencil as if it were a telephone pole. So this Big Dipper would be oriented like that. The Big Dipper on this particular one, if you rotate the map to put the ground that's near it down, you're going to end up holding it like this. And the Big Dipper would hold water, right? It'll look, roughly speaking, like that. Questions? So that this orientation bit is probably the most important part of learning how to use the Starfinder, right? Because that's what we'll be using them for in lab, in order to find stars. And if you don't know what the stars are supposed to look like, it's going to be hard to find that pattern in the sky. So, yep.
Pretty much every time I've ever seen a Big Dipper, it's looked like that.
No. So it goes around in a circle. So you'll see all the possible orientations of it. Yep, just coincidence. It looks like that now in the fall, which is a good time to be looking at it. And it actually looks, if I recall correctly, in spring, it looks more like that when we're doing the same sorts of things. But it can be nearly overhead when it's rotated around to the top side of the North Celestial Pole. So all of these constellations constantly change what they look like in the sky, which is required, of course, because the sky is rotating. Right? So there are kind of two ways to use the sky. One way is the way we've just described, and that is to say that you pick your constellation and you put the ground that's closest to it down, and then of course you look at the sky above the ground, then that piece of the sky would show you kind of what that constellation would look like. Another way that works okay is to think about it on top of you and then orient the zenith of this map, which is right in the center, and then rotate it until north points north, and then you can kind of imagine stretching this like a piece of rubber so that it would actually cover the horizon. So there's a couple of ways of dealing with this map. Questions? And of course, the overall game plan is to match the date and time, and then it's supposed to show you what things look like. Questions? So, you know, kind of no surprise, there's been one of these online quizzes every day. That's the next one. We're kind of done reading in the book for a while. So it's just to read that material online and take the resulting quiz. Lab starts next week, so make sure you remember what lab section you're in. Bring all of this stuff that I've handed out to you to lab and bring it to class for a while. In the end, we'll be going on to other topics and it won't be required to bring them to class. Questions? It's been clear, so it's been a great time to start the home labs too. And if you've noticed, what kind of the first thing you want to do when you do those home labs is send a scan of it to me so I can kind of see that you're on the right track. And if you want to have some idea what the right track is, if you go to the online website, there are examples of scans that kind of show you the critical information and how to go about doing it. Well, we didn't really add too much to our list of vocabulary words last time. The main one that's, it's been in the online stuff for quite a while, and that's this idea of the celestial sphere. So the stars really are at radically different distances from us, but we can imagine them all being on a sphere, and that sphere is rotating around us. So here's kind of the sphere that the dinosaur is experiencing, and the idea is this whole sphere is rotating about the North Celestial Pole as a solid object. So since the stars are attached to the celestial sphere, they're going to have the same shape. So the Big Dipper always has this shape, even though it has different orientations in the sky, depending upon how the celestial sphere has rotated around the Earth. So since we've got sphere, we might as well have poles, the thing that it rotates about, and an equator, the thing that's halfway between the two poles, the great circle that's halfway between the two poles. We ran into these words culminate and transit. So if the stars are going from east to west and the meridian goes north to south, sometime during the day, sometime during every day, the star has to cross that meridian. And when it's crossing the meridian, it has its maximum altitude, and that's kind of what's behind the word culminate, which usually means to reach some sort of maximum. And of course, it's going by the meridian, and that's where the origin of the word transit is. But they mean exactly the same thing. A star that is in the process of crossing the meridian. And it happens every day to every star. Just a matter of the time of day that's going to occur. Okay, questions on using the star finder? Okay, can you make a pretty good guess about what we're going to do today, right? So the plan is to learn how to use these star maps and then break up into groups that to deal with them. So kind of for the first time, we actually have things that are numbers in order to describe these stars. So the stars are actually changing their position all the time, and it's nice to have an invariant representation of the sky. Right, so even though the Earth is spinning, we can make a static map that shows the relationship of the various continents. And it's the same idea with the maps of the celestial sphere. And we got two of these maps. We've got one map, the SCO02, and that's designed to map the region around the North Celestial Pole. So if you look right in the center of this map, you'll see Polaris, the pole star, and the Little Dipper. And you can kind of imagine holding this little map up to the north point in the sky and thinking about how it would rotate around. The other map we've got, the SCO-01, it's designed to be a map that wraps around the equator. So if you're going to use this map, you can imagine kind of aligning it with the celestial equator. Remember, the celestial equator goes from east to west, kind of that way around our sky. So you can think about aligning the central line of this map with that equator and seeing how the stars line up. So if you were looking in the west using this map, you'd be holding it like this. If you were looking in the south, you'd be looking like that. If you were looking in the east, you'd be looking like that. And you can't use it in the north, right? Because it doesn't include the north polar region. So this is mostly for the non-north piece of the sky. Okay, so when we're talking about the Earth, we've got angles that represent the location of spots on the Earth based on latitude and longitude. Right? And latitude is the thing that goes above or below the Earth's equator, and longitude is the thing that goes around the Earth's equator, judging from the particular location of Greenwich, England. So we're going to have similar sorts of numbers that describe the location on the celestial sphere. So the number that's like latitude that goes up or down from the celestial equator, which is that line, that's called the declination. Right, so if we have this thing in our sky, here's the celestial equator, which stretches from east to west. Declination is the angle that that star is from the celestial equator. So, you know, automatically, just as the latitude of the Earth's north pole is 90 degrees, the declination of the north celestial pole is going to be 90 degrees. Okay? So, declination is pretty normal. Right ascension is kind of unusual. So the first thing we need for the thing that's like longitude is some zero point, right? The equator is the obvious zero point for declination, but the sphere is rotationally symmetric, so there isn't an obvious spot to pick to be the equivalent of Greenwich, England, to be the zero of the thing that's like longitude. And I won't say exactly how this is picked to start with, but this is the spot. It's called the vernal equinox. So kind of an arbitrary location, although it's maybe not as arbitrary as Greenwich, England was, is picked to be the zero of that. And that quantity is called the right ascension. So that's measured along the celestial equator from the vernal equinox. Now the first kind of funny thing about right ascension is it's not measured in degrees. So if you look at this chart, you won't see things that are labeled degrees here. You'll see things that run from 0 to 23. So instead of measuring it in terms of angles, we're going to measure it in terms of time. And the time and angles both kind of go around in a circle, so it's fairly natural. So 24 hours of right ascension are going to correspond to 360 degrees. So 1 hour of right ascension is going to correspond to 15 degrees. The reason for doing that is that the celestial sphere rotates about 1 hour of right ascension per hour of time. So if we know where the celestial sphere is rotated at noon, we can figure out where it'll be at 3 p.m. by just rotating it through 3 hours of right ascension. The other thing that's maybe a little bit unusual is usually axes increase this way, right? Usual XY axes. And notice that that's not the case for right ascension. It increases this way. And it's made to increase so that the direction of rotation of the sphere makes right ascension increase. And so the sphere, as viewed by this guy, is going to rotate from east to west. So we want the numbers to increase that same way. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the zero of this map. What's defining it? And notice that there's this kind of sine wave line on this map. That's the ecliptic. So far we've defined the ecliptic as where the planets usually are. But we can now add a precise definition of it. It's exactly the path of the sun. So we notice that the stars, per se, have fixed positions on the celestial sphere. That's what allows us to make these sort of maps. But the position of the planets are ephemeral. They change from time to time. Typically not hugely, not during a night, for example, but slowly over time, the position of the planets is changing on the celestial sphere. And that's actually the origin of the word planet. It comes from the word for wanderer. So instead of having a fixed position on the celestial sphere, the sun in particular has a slowly changing position. So the sun is gradually moving like that around the celestial sphere. It doesn't have a fixed location. And same thing with the planets and the moon. The precise path that the sun is taking on the celestial sphere defines the ecliptic, and the planets are just pretty close to the ecliptic because they're also going around the sun.
In regards to the stars being in a fixed position, if the universe is rapidly expanding, is the reason that the stars kind of stay the same is because they're going in the same direction that we are?
Well, so I like lots of the things that you said. So the universe is expanding, but it turns out that the galaxy itself is not expanding.
Okay, so all the stars that we can see are within this galaxy?
So with a handful of exceptions, anything that you can see is part of our galaxy.
Okay.
And nothing that is very bright is not part of our galaxy. So all of the bright stars and basically anything you can see with your naked eye, with really one exception that I can think of, those are all part of our galaxy. And our galaxy isn't expanding per se. So what's happening is the distance between the galaxies is increasing, but the galaxies are staying pretty much the same. But that really doesn't help because the galaxy is actually rotating pretty fast. So the stars are moving.
But they're staying the same in relation to each other.
So that's the first thing that's happening is our star is like the other stars and we're all going in pretty much the same direction. So things aren't changing a whole lot, but we're not going in precisely the same direction. So the stars will change position over the centuries. So during your lifetime, this map of the sky will be perfectly adequate. And if you saw a similar map that was made by the Greeks, it would look very, very, very similar. But over tens of thousands of years, the shapes of the constellations are gradually changing. So for example, for the Big Dipper, it turns out that these stars are all kind of going this way, and I think these two stars are kind of going the other way, so the shape of the Big Dipper is not going to be the same 10,000 years from now. But close enough, it's going to be the same for us. So the stars don't actually have literally fixed positions on the celestial sphere. They have what's called proper motion. So the location of the stars, their right ascension and declination, is gradually changing. The amount of that is usually measured in arc seconds per century. So degree is a pretty small amount. An arc minute is a 60th of a degree, and an arc second is a 60th of a minute. So very, very small amounts of change. Yeah, so they're going fast. They're going faster than the planets are going, but they're so distant that we don't notice their change. Right? So a fly that's going a few miles an hour buzzing around your head, its angle seems to change radically. Whereas those cars on I-94 that you know are going 70 miles an hour, they move at an angular speed that's pretty slow. So the stars are all moving quite fast by standards of our solar system. but they're also way far away, so the angle isn't changing very much. More questions? And even these planets, you know, they'll move from constellation to constellation over a period of months. They're not moving very fast either. So if wherever Jupiter is now, it'll be pretty much the same place tomorrow and a month from now. The fastest mover is the moon. The moon will go through one full circle in a month. So it'll kind of move through a constellation per night. More questions? Okay, so if you look carefully at this map, you'll see that there are dates that are given along the ecliptic. So those dates are telling you when the sun are in those various locations. So in particular, if you look around this time, you'll see dates that are close to March 21. And if you look at this time, you'll see dates that are close to June 21. And if you look at this time, of course they're the same spot, you'll see dates that are close to September 21. And if you look at this spot, you'll see dates that are close to December 21. So those are kind of magic dates, which maybe ring a bell with you. Those are when we define the change in the seasons. So we have what are called equinoxes. So we have the spring equinox, which is called the vernal equinox, and we have the fall equinox. These are when the sun is on the celestial equator. So the sun is on the spring equinox, March 21, the sun is here. On the fall equinox, autumnal equinox, the sun is at that location. So in spring, of course, the sun is starting to go into the northern hemisphere of the north celestial sphere, which means it's going to have longer days higher in the sky, whereas in the fall equinox, the sun is moving to negative declinations and it's going to be lower in the sky. We're not going to see it as much. Okay, so equinox is when it's on the equator. The solstices, those are the extremes. So to put numbers on these things, this is a table that I basically want you to memorize. So here we have a date, here we have a right ascension, and here we have a declination. So on March 21, approximately, it moves around a little bit because of leap year and such, and on September 21, that's when the sun is on the celestial equator. And if it's on the equator, it has a declination of zero. By definition, the right ascension of the vernal equinox is zero. And of course, halfway around, it's going to be half of 24 hours, the right ascension of the autumn equinox is going to be 12 hours. Then we have the solstices, the extremes. So if you look at this map, you can see that the sun reaches a declination at this extreme that's about 23 and a half degrees. And we're one quarter of 24 hours, so we're 6 hours. And if you look at the bottom of that sine curve, we have a declination that is minus 23 and a half degrees. And that has to happen at 18 hours. Okay, so the sun is a wanderer, like the other planets, and it's moving around in a fairly regular pattern. It has to go through 360 degrees, so it's moving about a degree a day, which is hardly noticeable. But over months, it's going to be moving through this set of patterns. Okay. Now, one of the things that often causes confusion, if you look at these little dates down here. So there are two sets of dates on this map. One of them that are on the ecliptic, those show the location of the sun. If you read this little note here at the bottom, it says that these dates correspond to when the meridian is on that hour circle. So I guess hour circle is something that I haven't defined yet. An hour circle is a circle that goes through the North Celestial Pole. So for example, this is part of a great circle that goes through the North Celestial Pole, so it's part of an hour circle. And it's kind of the opposite of the diurnal circles, right, which go this way. On the SCO-01 sort of map, which I thought I had a transparency of, but maybe it's hiding. Here it is. On the SCO-01 sort of map, this is part of an hour circle. Doesn't really matter if it's upside down or backwards, I guess. This is part of an hour circle, because if you connected it up, it would eventually reach the pole. And these things here are the diurnal circles, right? So anything that is a line of constant declination, anything like that would be an hour circle, would be a diurnal circle. And anything that's perpendicular to it would be an hour circle. So in terms of kind of the normal definition of coordinates on a sphere, the hour circle and the diurnal circles are going to make a grid. And we can put numbers on that grid based on the right ascension and declination. Kind of what's more natural when you're observing are the azimuth and altitude. But the azimuth and altitude of stars constantly change as they rise and eventually set. So you can't write those numbers down in a book, but you can write down the right ascension and declination of a star in the book. Okay, so here's kind of the spherical version of what we've said. Here we've got the equator. Here we have an inclined great circle. Here's where the sun is when it's high in our sky on June 21. Here's where it's about to become on the equinox. And of course, if we're talking about an equinox and the sun is on the equator and it's going to rise exactly in the east and set exactly in the west, and its day and night are going to be exactly divided in half that way. So here we have where the sun is in the southern hemisphere, and here we have our vernal equinox, which defines the zero of right ascension. Okay, so the celestial sphere is turning, right, as it rotates from east to west, and so various parts of it are going to be swishing by our meridian. So the meridian might be at this location now, in an hour it'll be there, in an hour it'll be there, in an hour it'll be there, as the celestial sphere rotates past us. Or if you want, of course, really we know the Earth is spinning, and what's happening is our meridian is swishing past the distant stars. Okay. So the star map is great because it's a permanent fixed record. It's not so great because to figure out how things are oriented in the sky, you have to think about where the North Celestial Pole is, and you have to orient your SCO-01 so that the north piece of it is pointing towards the North Star. Right? So particularly if you're facing north, that map could be oriented most any possible direction. Okay, so it's good that it's permanent, and these maps are big, so they're fairly accurate. There's probably the least distortion that you're going to have in any of our maps in these maps. But they're bad, in fact, because it's hard to figure out where the object is above our horizon. So if you have to use this sort of map, typically what you're going to do is figure out what the date is, and then you can figure out where the meridian is on that date. And if you know where the meridian is, then you know roughly what stars are going to be in the sky. It's much easier to use the Starfinder to figure out what stars are going to be in your sky. But you can do it either way. So high accuracy, fixed location, Starfinder very useful, but not particularly accurate. Okay. Well, let's do what we did before and get into groups of three and work on a project with the maps. So the first thing you're going to do is be filling in this table with right ascensions and declinations and constellations. You guys, group of three, you're a group of two. Brothers, I take it. You want to be, you can either be two groups of two or a group of, let's have two groups of two. I want to have a group of four.
What does it mean when it's by a variable star and double star?
So, a variable star is a, there are various types of variable stars, and actually I'm studying two types of them now. One type of them balloons out, so its actual brightness changes. And kind of the most famous variable star is the demon star of Perseus, Algol. Nice big variable star. The variable star I'm currently studying is about there. It's too dim to be on this map. Currently, there's an exploding star. So this is a star that is was totally invisible, and now it's becoming visible for binoculars. It'll be visible for about a year, and then it'll go back down to nothing. And it's about there. So variable stars are stars that vary. Multiple stars, which they're calling binary stars, are, I don't know if you saw the opening scene of Star Wars, but there are two stars that are two suns that are together in the sky. And that actually turns out to be pretty common, where stars aren't solitary like our sun, but they have star partners that are orbiting each other. So this is not really a great example of this, but if you look at the end of the Big Dipper, you'll see two stars that are near each other. So this one dot, if you have bad eyes, will just look like one dot. But if you have reasonably good eyes, you'll see two dots. That's not a great example because actually those two stars aren't orbiting around each other. But actually, if you looked at a telescope at either of those two stars, you'd see that each one of those is two stars that are going around each other. So it turns out the majority of stars actually are parts of multiple star systems. The sun is relatively unusual, being a solitary star.